Hello.
You're on with Nick and Fiona.
I think I would have been having long conversations with a slightly unreasonable woman.
Welcome to The Playlist, where we talk about movies and TV shows that are worth your time. I'm Fiona Williams, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nick Bassine. Hey, Nick, what are we talking about today?
Fiona, you and I today are talking about our new Nicole Kidman movie, Destroyer.
Which is great.
And you have an interview with the director of this movie, Karin Kusama. We are also talking about a new German show on SBS On Demand. It's called Pagan Peak. And, of course, what we've been watching. But first, Destroyer.
Who is it?
No ID, no idea.
I know your whole story.
Placing our agent undercover, she'll look right enough next to our guy.
If we do this, we accept the consequences.
Yes.
Do you love me?
You know I do.
You chose to play cops and robbers. And you lost.
What did you think going into this movie? What were your expectations?
I didn't have any, I have to say. Like, I intentionally didn't read much, watch the trailer or whatnot. I knew Nicole Kidman had been nominated for a Golden Globe for her performance. And it's hard to gauge what it is from the poster, which is a very disheveled and quite grizzled our Nicole Kidman. But yeah, it's fantastic. It's a revenge story, kind of a vigilante. She's vigilante justice, if you will.
Yes. So she plays a, as you said, grizzled detective who has clearly been through some tough times, but they jump around in time so that we don't, she's investigating a murder, but we piece together her past based on these flashbacks.
Yeah, it doesn't spoon feed you, and I do enjoy that. You have to lean forward and pay attention, and it's so meticulous the way it's put together. And if I may, and this isn't a spoiler, at the end, you want to go watch it again.
Absolutely, because I definitely felt like I missed a whole bunch of things, because it comes together in a very exciting way, much more exciting than I had been throughout most of the movie. And then it all starts coming alive, and I realized that, oh, I didn't see that coming.
Gotta keep up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I ended up thinking it was pretty great.
Yeah, no, it really is. And it's directed by Karin Kusama, who is coming up, who you would know from Girl Fight.
Yeah, great movie.
Yes, Aeon Flux.
That did not look like a good movie, and I haven't seen it. Have
sure.
you seen that?
Yes, back in the day. Oh. I haven't actually revisited it. Jennifer's Body.
Oh, interesting.
Yes, and The Invitation, which is her most recent film prior to Destroyer, which is a smaller indie film that I think you can catch on Netflix. But having had the experiences of doing Aeon Flux and Jennifer's Body for Hollywood studios, they were not great experiences. So Aeon Flux, of course, flopped. That was the Charlize Theron big budget attempt at a superhero movie. So Karin Kusama has now gone back to doing more, you know, quote unquote indie films, which we get into as well.
Obviously, Nicole Kidman won prizes for playing Virginia Woolf with the big nose in The Hours. And I don't know how great that movie is. And whenever she's got extra stuff on her face, I tend to think, oh, you know, I don't need that. Mm. I think I really liked her in Big Little Lies, and she's in a whole bunch of great movies. But I thought that was trying too hard. And because it's very, like, the makeup is caked on to make her look extra grizzled.
In Destroyer, you mean?
Yeah, and at first, I thought it was distracting.
Oh, okay. Because that's present day, and it does jump back 17 years as well, and she's incredibly youthful and has a young, fresh haircut, and which is contrast to the doesn't care about her appearance whatsoever 17 years on, where I don't know. I don't think it's caked on. Like, she's weathered and clearly has not moisturized in those 17 years.
And has been smoking heavily or
yes.
something, yeah.
Yes. I mean, immediately you sense all is not right in this woman's world. It actually reminded me of the Joaquin Phoenix film from last year, You Were Never Really Here, Never Really There, with Lynn Ramsey's film. And I spoke to her on the show back then, in that it's an immediate signpost of this character's wearing their worries in a physical way. I didn't find it distracting, actually, her face. I just think it's Nicole Kidman with wrinkles and close-ups and bad hair. It wasn't overtly
okay
makeup for me.
Yeah, I guess I when I think of Nicole Kidman, I think of her as a big movie star. And then if she's got some extra tacked on affectation, I don't know, it feels unnecessary. But it all works out.
Yeah. Okay. But she, you know, you think of her as a big movie star, but she does live in both worlds. Like,
she does,
she's always doing indie films for every big movie star moment she has, which they're not as prominent as they once were, all the big tentpole films. She's doing a lot more work in television, like you say, Big Little Lies. But, you know, she did Strangerland back here a couple of years ago. She's always game. Yeah, she's always quite willing to wear whatever the physical requirements are for the
role. What do you think of when you think of great Nicole Kidman?
I thought Rabbit Hole was pretty great.
Yeah, that was good. Lion, do you think she's good in Lion?
She's very good in Lion. There's a couple of moments, I think, as the mum who adopted the boys. I was thinking that he'd have a brother, and of course he did. It's part of the story. Yeah. No, there's quite beautiful moments, just glances she casts to the boys just that I think are quite gorgeous moments.
Cold Mountain?
No, not one of the best. I wouldn't put up there. Paddington. She's great in Paddington.
Oh, she's great in Paddington.
I'm darting all over the place. Big Little Lies as well.
Yeah, she's great in Big Little Lies.
Oh, great moment with Bradley Whitford in this too. He's excellent cameo.
He's fun.
As a kind of mob lawyer, really, isn't he? Bit of a Michael Cohen.
He's got a Michael Cohen look about him, definitely.
Stunning white blow wave and velour tracksuit. Yes. But look, it's all Nicole really in this. And so I had the chance to talk to Karen Kasama about the process of working with Nicole, but also developing this film.
Right. Let's listen.
Hi, Fiona.
Hi, Karen. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks.
Excellent. Thank you so much for joining us and congratulations on the film. What a movie. I love it.
I appreciate that.
No, absolutely. And like, it's rare to watch a film and then want to watch it again immediately because of that ending. But so Nicole Kidman, you know, has obviously already established herself as being pretty game, like in her career.
Yep.
But this level of brutality and the kind of vengeance that she brings to this one, that seems a new side that we haven't really seen on screen, and I'm here for it. I'm just curious how did you know she was right for it, but also working together to create this complicated woman that is Erin, how did you manage that?
Well, I think when I first spoke with her about the role, she was so attuned to the question of shame and regret and guilt and what that can do to kind of poison a mind and body if you don't deal with it. And I felt like that was such an interesting way into the character because I think in some respects I was looking at the character from the outside in and thinking about sort of her place within the story. And Nicole, being the actor that she is, and I mean this in a truly constructive way, having the healthy ego of an artist at the height of her powers, she understood that the character was the story. So it was inside out from the very beginning when we were talking about the role. And I just understood, oh, okay, she's going to go to these uncharted territories. She's going to go to places I hadn't considered, and even places she hadn't considered, because that's what she's looking to do. Mm-hmm. And she articulates that so quickly about how she likes to work that I immediately felt like, okay, I'm going to take the leap with her. And in terms of building the character together, we talked a lot. We exchanged emails and I sent her music and articles and photographs and drone footage of wild coyotes running through Los Angeles in the Silver Lake Reservoir and, you know, stuff that felt like, one, communicating a place,
sure,
but also kind of communicating this collision that the movie is attempting to explore between, I want to say, like the wild world and our most animal instincts, and then something about, you know, the rules of civilization, the rules of doing right by people, and obviously rules that Erin Bell as a character has trouble living by. And so I think I sent her a lot of disparate reference material, and my gut is that Nicole has just gotten very good at knowing what helps her and what doesn't in that kind of dialogue with the director.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a new way of directing for you, like a different, you know, to how you've done your previous films and your TV work, I guess, as well?
I mean, I think every movie is different, sure, and every actor is different. This character was such an enigma in some ways. I mean, that's part of the experience of watching her, is this sense of, I want to say, like, constant inquiry into who she might be or really be. And so I did feel a need to, I don't know, really start the deep conversation with Nicole early, because though I couldn't have known this, I'm glad this it happened this way. Once she got on set, she was a very quiet, magnetic, frightening force on the set, because she really wasn't an actress showing up to play a role. You know, she kind of really was just the character.
Yeah.
And that's intense. That was intense to be around. And so I'm happy we did all that legwork beforehand.
Sure,
because otherwise, I think I would have been having a lot of long conversations with a slightly unreasonable woman.
Fair. And in part of, you know, creating the mystery around her, but revealing elements of her character when we need to know them, quite early on, you know, you see how far she'll go for this case and for a lead. And, of course,
yes,
I'm talking about the hand job scene. You know, it is quite early on, but also it says so much about her. But how did you want to work that to get the tone right, so that it's a character moment, but also it's not exploitative, but also it's kind of sad and awkward as well? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was a scene where I just said, you know, to me, the power of this scene is that no one is a victim in it. The power comes from watching two people with different agendas making a kind of unpleasant transactional agreement. But part of what's disturbing about it, perhaps, is that this kind of the rubric of who's in charge, who is victimizer, who is victim, that question has been removed. You know, they're sort of both victimizers and both victims.
Yes.
And so to me, that was kind of interesting to see, I want to say, the traditional power dynamic being removed.
Mm-hmm.
And also really kind of having to drive the conversation toward the complicated and complex nature of this initial relationship that we see with Toby, because she clearly knows him and they're clearly familiar with each other in a way, even years later, we gather, that seems to say they were once close. And so particularly if it's the kind of movie one is willing to watch a second time, I think that scene takes on even a little bit more of a sad resonance, because he's dying and she's sort of fulfilling a last wish in a weird way, that he be touched by someone not his mother, you know.
Yeah.
It's intense. I guess when I thought about it in that framework, I thought there was something sort of, in a complicated way, merciful about the scene.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. And then you've got a bunch of weird owl statues looking on as well. So.
Yeah, <That's all bad>. Exactly.
Of course.
Right. And then there's the kind of tonal shift into humor. Yes.
It's all in there. And you know, throughout the film, you know, you have her take literal punches to the gut. You know, she gives as good as she gets, clearly, which is very satisfying on that level.
Mm.
Yeah, it, you know, draws attention to the fact that we don't really see that a lot on screen, whereas, you know, Liam Neeson and Charles Bronson before him, and, you know, it's typical in a lot of male-led films. Yeah, just your choices with showing that and the sound design as well that makes you really feel that those gut punches. Yeah, what were your choices in that?
You know, when I was directing those sequences, it was important that things look kind of messy and real and just have the surprising quality that violence actually has. You know, it's awful.
Mm.
A lot of the time.
Yeah.
And so I think I wanted it to feel like awful. And I really, really felt strongly with this movie that, particularly given the story and the way the story progresses, it was so important that we understand that violence has consequences.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of this film, the violence that she perpetrates and the violence perpetrated against her has very grave consequences.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess for me, that was the driving kind of idea animating how we approached those scenes. There couldn't be this kind of balletic, you know, just simply bodies in motion kind of feel to it. It had to have something more kind of flailing and reckless and disturbing, you know? Yeah. And so I think what has started to happen is that we see so much violence in film and TV that we forget the psychological and physical toll that takes on us. And I thought it would be interesting to actually, you know, sort of on the one hand, give an audience what they think they want or what they think they're used to. Mm. And then on the other hand, maybe reframe that in a more authentic light so that they have to sort of reconsider how they watch violence or experience it when they're watching it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and also I just want to talk about the way you're making your films. And, you know, we're coming up on 20 years, I guess, since Girl Fight next year, I mm-hmm. think. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, you've ridden the wave of fame and had your time doing studio films and for better or worse in your experiences. Mm-hmm. Obviously for worse, some of them, sorry. How have that shaped you in terms of the control you want over your films now and how that has impacted you in terms of the films you want to be making?
Yeah,
at the
budget
levels? Mm.
You know, it was good for me to understand the benefits of making studio films, the resources that are available to you that are more than just money, that are also in human beings,
sure.
And that there can be something kind of glorious about it, but also with that comes a very, very, very high price sometimes. And you can kind of never know, you're never going to get your bottom line invoice until it's too late.
Right.
And so for me, you know, what I'm trying to gauge is whether or not I can trust the situation to be creatively supportive and encouraging, no matter where the money comes from, but particularly in the studio framework. And now having made two films independently again, I do really feel like I'm occupying a really special territory, and I've managed to now have, you know, final cut on three of my five films, and I'm really proud of that.
Yeah.
And I'd love to keep adding to those films, you know, and yet I recognize that not every film that I may really want to do cannot always offer me that. So it becomes a question of how much of my 20 years now of experience gives me the confidence and the faith that I'm going to be okay as I sort of tread through some choppy waters. And so what's been nice about being in the business and surviving is that I've come to a different place personally, and I feel a little bit more confident personally, not in some, you know, big swagger kind of way, but I just feel like a solid sense of self, I guess I would say. And for that, I'm really thankful. And that's the thing I hope I take with me into all these successive situations, good, bad, and in between. You know, my experience actually now matters.
Yeah.
And I'm really happy I can bring it to bear on all the next things that I do.
Yeah. No, more power to you, honestly. And what conversations are you having now that Destroyer, you know, has been noticed with the Golden Globe nomination, sadly not an Oscar nomination, but what kind of discussions are you having now? Are you sort of noticing that it's picking up?
Well, I mean, I think it's been illuminating to really see how much work there is still to be done, how much unconscious bias and just the sense of familiarity with old power structures people generally feel.
Mm.
And so it's scary. It's scary to like put your chips on a new face or a new name and an unexpected one at that. And so I'm kind of seeing the mountain ahead of us or the mountain range ahead of us. But I guess for me, I'm feeling pretty thankful that I can kind of define for me the conversation I'm wanting to have by making the work I want to make. And so that, at the very least, strikes me as a step in the right direction, you know, just continuing to find ways to make work that interests me. I feel like somehow that has to be part of something larger that is positive.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And we like to ask our guests when we wrap things up what they've been watching lately, loving or hating, like maybe there's something that infuriated you. But what have you been watching lately that has stood out for you?
I loved Killing Eve.
Okay, yep.
The first season of Killing Eve, and I haven't gotten to the second season. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, I kind of tired at the end of the day, and I unfortunately don't watch much at this point, but me and my family spent many a night around the television watching The Great British Bake Off. So my taste is, and then I loved movies like Leave No Trace and Mandy this year.
Oh,
so
sure.
Very different movies, obviously, from one another. But I would say those are some of my top picks of the year.
Sure. An eclectic mix.
Yes, exactly.
Well, look, thank you so much. And yeah, as I said, love Destroyer. And real treat to talk to you. Thank you so much, Karen.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye.
So that was Karen Kusama. She really liked Mandy, one of your most hated movies of last year. How did that feel?
We'll agree to disagree on that one. Yes. Well, I heard Leave No Trace, and I was responding to that. And oh, Mandy. Oh well.
Just kind of slipped it in.
Each to their own. But Great British Bake Off, brilliant.
Yeah, really good answers about how she uses the violence, what she decides to show on screen and hide. And,
yeah. Exactly. So Destroyer is out in cinemas now, and you should go and see it.
So now we come to a new German series called Pagan Peak.
So this one is new to SBS On Demand, and it follows a German detective who has to team up with her Austrian counterpart because in the tradition of great Scandi noir and expanded European noir, this one, there is a body on the border. So
Scandi noir and noir TV shows love a border, love border issues.
They do, because
there's a lot of them, I guess, in Europe.
Yes. And this, if you're thinking, that sounds like The Bridge, well, this is a format derived from The Bridge, but they've really adapted it. So the great Scandi thriller, where there is a body on the bridge, that is the border, etc.
Yeah.
And that's been remade in
something like 8 different countries or something.
Yeah, including the US-Mexico border.
Yeah, that's right.
In the Channel, so the UK-French border. And I think there's also one that's going to be a Russian and Estonian one as well. But like, because
it's a good idea.
It is, because then you've got ready-made tensions, cultural misunderstandings, assumptions. You can interrogate similarities but also differences.
Yeah.
And it's all about identity. So obviously, that's rich for story. Sadly, it's one format we can't adapt here in Australia, being an island.
Oh, right, because we have.
That's right.
I see what you're saying.
Think about it.
So what differentiates this one from the Bridge manifestations is the folk horror pagan element.
Yes.
Where the body that they find at the beginning is posed in such a way, and as the detectives dig deeper, they become ensconced in a world of sacrifice and
intrigue.
Yeah.
And ritual.
Yeah.
And unlike the previous incarnations of this format, here, this is more a serial killer kind of a treatment, because fairly early on in the series, we do know who's committing these ritualistic murders. And it's as much about getting into their psyche as it is a companion story of the detectives trying to catch the killer. So there's much in here that's intriguing.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd say if you're into crime dramas, if you're into Scandi, Nordic, noir, is it? They're both the same, aren't they?
They are, but this is German, but yes.
Yes. And of course, if you like The Bridge, I think this is safe territory for you.
Very much so. And I enjoyed a little bit cheesy as well in some of the treatment with, you get a lot of backstory about the detectives, but it doesn't go too far down that path. Like the Austrian detective, he's battle scarred from something in his past. He's a man with secrets, and
his name is literally Winter.
Yes. Yeah.
I like how he dresses with that big the fur and the coat, the big overcoat.
Yes. You know, he shows up, he's a bit of a wild guy, smoking cigarettes and having sunglasses, and a bit of a devil may care attitude, if you will. And there's a technique they do in here where there's a close-up and then there's a flashback to establish character. I enjoy it. I think it's quite fun. It's not too much that it becomes overly cheesy, but there's moments of that I thought were well done. And this is from the producers of The Lives of Others, the Oscar-winning film from
those years ago.
It is, sure is. And they also made Dark.
Another very popular German show.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah, I think you should check it out. It's called Pagan Peak.
And it's streaming currently at SBS On Demand. Now we come to the part of the show where we talk about what we've been watching. Fiona, what have you been watching?
Thanks for asking, Nick. I've been watching quite a bit, actually. All movies.
You were on a long flight recently.
Yes, quite a long haul flight. So that's a good chance to catch up on movies that I missed when they were in cinemas. Movies like Widows.
Yep.
Perfect plane movie.
Very good plane movie, I would say.
And a good movie broadly.
Enjoyable, straight down the middle, nice thriller, some flourishes.
Yes, Steve McQueen directed, Viola Davis starrer, Michelle Rodriguez, Elizabeth Debicki. Yeah, I enjoyed. Bit of actually interesting talk about in line with Destroyer. Female-led bank heist story.
Were you surprised by those twists? There were some twists.
Not really, I have to say. But I thought it was good. I thought it was in that it absolutely walked the genre line, hit the beats of the convention of how you tell a bank heist kind of film with a twist, but also some cutaways and moments for characters that you don't normally see. Like you don't normally see a woman reacting to a stupid observation from a man or having, like, there was just little moments that feel different because of the focus of the story. Yeah, which I welcome.
I thought our Elizabeth Debicki was pretty good in it.
Yeah. Yeah, she's good.
Were you reminded of Liam Neeson's recent interview comments?
Sadly, yes, I was. Look it up.
Yeah.
Liam. Not great. One movie that was great, Juliet Naked.
You liked it?
I did. I really enjoyed it. I had heard good things. I think it screened at the Sydney Film Festival last year and I missed it. You've seen it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I saw it on a plane.
Oh, you also flew?
Yes.
The week before I did. And then, we high-fived at customs.
So it's a romantic comedy, Ethan Hawke and
Rose Byrne,
who I am liking more and more. Mm. She's very charming. She's great and everything. Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was okay.
I thought it was great. Okay. I thought it was very funny. Also stars Chris O'Dowd. He's this obsessive fan of a 90s...
Indie rock hero,
yes, with a very small output.
Yeah.
Stopped making records back in the day and he's obsessed with him looking for bootleg copies and whatnot. And she's his long-suffering partner.
Yeah.
Don't care for this thing whatsoever. And through curious twists of fate, ends up having a pen pal relationship with said singer. Yes. And Juliet Naked is one of the bootleg CDs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very funny, I thought. And great performance from Ethan Hawke as the troubadour.
Yeah. Everybody's pretty good in it. And Chris O'Dowd was pretty funny. And it's a kind of a bridesmaids sort of a reunion with Chris O'Dowd and Rose Byrne.
Oh, yeah. Forgot he was in that.
I enjoyed. It was a very nice romantic comedy.
All right. Do you want to know some more? What else have you been watching?
Yeah, what else?
Loved Destination Wedding.
Haven't seen it. Very curious.
Were we speaking about romantic comedies? No, I guess we weren't.
Yeah, now.
Sure. We were indeed. Keanu Reeves, Winona Ryder, together again as...
Again?
I mean, they've never really led films before. But they've worked together before.
What have they been in together?
They were both in A Scanner Darkly. They were both in Dracula, Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Ah, yes, of course.
Yeah. Private Lives of Pippa Lee. I'm not looking this up.
Oh, wow.
You
are very familiar with Keanu Reeves' Winona Ryder vehicles. That's impressive.
Yeah, I can't apply to Mastermind. Coming to SBS, but... I'm not allowed to enter. No. Anyway, it's great. Destination Wedding. So they both play reluctant attendees of a destination wedding. It's very cynical, very sarcastic. They hate each other, of course, on first sight. Yeah. Up to you how you want to speculate where things go.
It kind of came and went, right?
I don't think it even got released. Oh. It's on DVD. That's how I have seen it. And I would encourage you to watch it. I loved it.
I'm going to watch it. That's great.
A bit dumb, but also they... clearly are having a fantastic time together. Yeah, I was there for it. Enjoy both their work immensely. Highly recommend it. What have you been watching?
So I saw Lego Movie 2. This time it's personal.
Is that?
No, that's not. That's the Jaws tagline. But, you know, it's all right. It's not really for me. It's very much, well, I mean, they fill it with tons of jokes like the first one. The first one was a bit of a revelation for me. I hadn't seen a kid's movie that was just blatant marketing actually filled with jokes and made more fun. So I really liked the first one. But then this second one just feels like it's running on the fumes of the last one and that style. And that style has been done so much now that it feels a little bit old and I fell asleep. But my 8-year-old loved it.
Because it's the last movie he's seen.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't really have that much more to say about it. It's just kind of all right.
Okay. Was there an horrendously catchy but annoying song in it?
Well, I think how catchy it was would be up for debate. I didn't think it was catchy, but they did an inverse "Everything Is Awesome" because that was the first one was "Everything Is Awesome."
Stop saying it; I don't want it in my head.
And now it's "Everything Is Not Awesome."
Oh,
it's just kind of I get the joke, but it wasn't that exciting. And it had a nice message about kids playing together and being nice and, you know, yeah.
But not much more by the sound of things.
Yeah, it's in theaters now. Take the kids.
Back to me.
Yeah.
There is also a film out this week, Swimming with Men.
Oh, yeah.
Starring Rob Brydon, whose work I enjoy. You may know.
He's very funny.
Yes, from The Trip and The Trip to Italy and Would I Lie to You, which I enjoy immensely, the panel show.
He's also really good in Ned and...
Gavin and Stacey.
Not Ned and Stacey. Gavin and Stacey, yeah.
Yes. Look, so his reputation precedes him. He's generally very good.
Yeah.
Sadly, this is not going to be on one of those lists for me going forward. It's kind of a middling story of a midlife crisis-plagued accountant played by Mr. Rob Brydon whose passions are ignited by joining a male synchronized swimming team.
Are all of his personal and professional issues sorted out as a result?
Of joining?
Yeah. Does it help him work through things emotionally?
Well, his passions are ignited, and I think that has a knock-on effect. Yes. I mean, this movie, you really don't have to ask that question if you see it. Like, it's my main issue is not with that conceit. It could be quite fun. You think of Full Monty or things like, you know, Calendar Girls or that kind of movie where it's a little bit quirky and a little bit
feel good.
Yes, very
light
much.
Comedy.
Very much. But it's just a bit of a mess, I have to say. Not a lot of discipline in the way it's directed. There's just a bit of everything. Some scenes don't make sense. It felt long. Yeah. No, not great.
Okay.
What was good? Sometimes, always, never. This is my last one now. Bill Nye, friend of the show.
Yeah.
In a similar vein, you might think he's a man whose passions are ignited by Scrabble, but always have been. Quite the wordsmith, yes, but the film itself isn't overly concerned with that. It becomes a bit of a family mystery and a family he can't really relate to his son.
This is with Sam...
Riley.
Riley, who's great in that Joy Division movie.
Yes, he is. Yeah. But this one, it's... In the best way, it's absolutely not what I thought it would be. It's a very stylized kind of a treatment. And once you settle into the rhythm of the way the story is told, yeah, it's quite a gratifying experience. I enjoyed. Sometimes, always, never. It's in cinemas now.
Where is Swimming with Men?
That is also in cinemas now.
Is it in cinemas? Well, that's it for our show. Make sure you go on to wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to SBS The Playlist. Leave a review. It helps people find the show. If you want to get in touch, we're on Twitter and Facebook at SBS Movies. I'm on Twitter at Nick Bassine.
I'm on Twitter at Anything But Fifi.
The Playlist is produced by Jeremy Wilmot. See you next week.
Thanks for listening.